If you've been around this church for the last few weeks, and you don't have to have been in order to follow along this morning, but if you have been around this church over the course of the last few weeks, you know that we have adopted a theme, a particular theme, during this season of Lent, that theme being vision. And we've been looking at vision through three different lenses, the first being the microscope, that inward gaze, that gaze of introspection, of discernment, looking into the contents of our own hearts and our own minds, and sorting and sifting the realities of our life from that perspective. And then the second of three beats is the telescope, where we step back from our own lives and we get a wider view of what's going on. Perhaps we envision ourselves within the context of our family systems, and then we open the aperture a little wider to our how we fit into our community, and then perhaps even wider about how we fit into our state, the state of Wyoming, and a little wider about what it means for us to be a part of the United States of America, and then even wider, what does it mean for us to be a citizen of the globe, and maybe even if we have big imaginations, even wider of like, what does it mean to be a particle of life in this amazing, wide, cosmic universe in which we live? And then that third beat, the kaleidoscope. We peer through the lens, expecting what we see to be dynamic, to most certainly change, but at each change to encounter a measure of beauty, and to have that beauty and goodness affirm our own experience, our own lives, our own being, our ontology. It's been a fun journey for me, perhaps confusing for some of you, but nevertheless, we make our way through. This morning, I want to do something creative, a bit of a departure from a typical didactic or hermeneutical sermon into something that would make a demand on our imagination. So I would like as much as you can for you to suspend the amygdala for at least the next 14 minutes, to let go of any self-consciousness you might have, and to play along with me, okay? So in this first series of exercises, we're going to write two notes, and I want you to write the note with me, okay? So I'd like you to have your imaginary note. No, really, let's see it. Your imaginary note. And then you have your imaginary pen. Nope, keep it there. Keep it there. Let's go. You got your note. We're writing a note to our kindergarten teacher. Or if you didn't go to kindergarten, to that first beloved teacher that you have. Mine was Mrs. Wildenthal. Mrs. Wildenthal is still alive. She must be 215 years old. But she came to my mom's funeral last year, and it was so sweet. It was so wonderful and loving to see her. So we're writing a note to that first teacher. Nope, really, we're writing the note. Come on, get it out. Dear Mrs. Wildenthal, or whatever name you have, dear beloved teacher, wow. Kindergarten. What an adventure, period. You must be the best recess facilitator in the history of recess facilitators, period. Learning to read was hard, but wow, the worlds it opened for me, period. If there were one thing from kindergarten that I might carry with me for the rest of my life, I think it would be nap time. Of course, I resisted at first, but nap time, what a glorious discipline. Thank you, Mrs. Wildenthal. Love, Jimmy. Let's mail them. I know, a little different, right? Hang with me. Let's make it even more different. Let's write one more note, okay? Let's write a letter to Santa. So pick up your note. Nope. Other hand. Non-dominant hand. And let's pick up your pen. Non-dominant hand. Dear Santa, I have been especially good this year. Santa, you see it all. I need not make a list because you already know. Please deliver the goods on Christmas Eve. Are you still awkwardly writing? Santa, I love Rudolph's nose. I look for it in the sky at night, even in June. Those elves of yours work hard. Thank them for me. And give my love to Mrs. Claus. Love, Jimmy. Equally as tender and kind, but a bit more disruptive, right? Picking up that paper and that pen with our non-dominant hands. You see, this vision work that we undertake, this work of changing our perspectives, there are times when it's meant to be challenging, where it's appropriate for it to be disruptive, still loving, still under the umbrella of love, but we take a different perspective from time to time in order to see things that we might not normally see. And these are skills that we're meant to bring to the biblical stories themselves. For those of us who have been in church from the time when we were little, these stories can have a familiarity to them where we pick them up in our dominant hands with our dominant minds, and we write them in the ways that they have always been written. And then we encounter a particular story like the one that we have today about this curious exchange between Jesus and Lazarus's entire family. And we're like, this story just doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense because we're using the wrong perspective. We're using the perspective of our minds. And this is a story that is a story that demands us to see it through the eyes of our hearts rather than the eyes in our heads. So let's take another journey. I invite you to close your eyes. Now, I know that sometimes there are those of us who don't feel particularly safe or at ease with closing our eyes when we're in a room full of people. And if you find yourself there, then I invite you just to cast your gaze downward. But if you do feel comfortable at closing your eyes, please close them. It'll help. The story today opens with Jesus returning to Bethany, to a particular place in Bethany, a particular place where he had been some weeks ago. And the last time Jesus met the threshold of Lazarus's house, he was met with great sorrow. Jesus meets the threshold of Lazarus's house with great sorrow in an encounter with Mary and Martha, Lazarus's sisters, who were grieving the death of their beloved brother. They were tight-knit siblings who shared a particularly close, loving, and intimate bond. Amidst the sorrow that Jesus meets at the threshold of Lazarus's house, there is also a measure of confusion. The sisters wonder why their rabbi, who is their brother's dearest friend, they are wondering why their rabbi didn't arrive 4 days sooner. If only, Lord, you had arrived 4 days sooner, we would not be experiencing such great sorrow, and our brother Lazarus would be in our midst. But that is no longer the case. On this day, when Jesus crosses the threshold of Lazarus's home, he is met with the deepest joy and the warmest sense of hospitality. the one who restored our brother to life is among us again. And Lazarus, the story tells us, is at the table, sitting next to Jesus, no longer smelling of death, but rather smelling full of life, full of well-being, full of flourishing and joy, a connection stronger than it ever has been to the people who have meant so much to them, to him, including his teacher, his friend, Jesus. Martha, knowing that this man is returning to her home, has been in the kitchen all day preparing a feast where they would welcome Jesus back into their midst and around their table, when they would share a joy that they had no idea they would ever know its depths until the last time he visited and their brother was restored. And Mary, not being one for the kitchen, does what she knows to do. Mary moves into the room and bathes her teacher's feet with a precious perfume. It is an act of utter tenderness that we can only see through the eye of our heart. Mary bathes Jesus' feet with this ointment, this balm, and the fragrance of that perfume permeates the entirety of the house. And then the tenderness of the scene is interrupted by the self-serving cynicism of Judas's mind. Why, oh, why would you spend that money that could have been used to feed the poor only to anoint this teacher's feet? How foolish, how wasteful. And yet, Jesus has such a separate experience from the eye of his own heart. He gets this gift that hardly any of us get. It is as if he is witnessing his own funeral, and all of the beloved, all those beloved friends and family who have surrounded him, have come around this table, each with the other, in order to celebrate the particular love that he embodied in their midst while he was with them, and yet he is there. This is a beautiful, tender, vulnerable moment, not just for Jesus, but for everyone around that table, including you and I who are around that table right now. If your eyes aren't already open, I invite you to open them. To come back to this room, having experienced something different, but knowing this story all along. This place that we have just gone must be the place where the psalmist went when he said in that first verse of the psalm this morning, "Then were we like those who dream." In a moment, I will sit down. And then we will have a bit of quiet. And then we will stand up and do what Episcopalians abhor doing. And we will recite the creed. I invite you to recite that creed from a different place, not from this one, but rather from this one, and see if it doesn't land a bit differently. Church, we are in for a wild ride for the coming 2 weeks. Next week, we meet Holy Week in the form of Palm Sunday, and we are off to the races. I invite you to pick up paper and to pick up pen with your non-dominant hand and to rewrite the Holy Week story from the place of your heart, so that we might get what Jesus intends for us to really get from that story. And then may we continue to write the story of our lives with our non-dominant hands from the center of our hearts. Amen.